Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you on Wednesday evening, August 11, 2010. It is now about 7.01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought and dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Or send us your email anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. Well, good evening, everyone. This evening, we are pleased to have with us Dr. Elena George. She's a board-certified physician. That's an auto in pulmonary medicine. In ear, nose, and throat. That's an otolaryngologist. She's returning now for a second time to be on our program. She's, I believe, on the line now. So I'll, instead of keeping her waiting, we'll put her on the line and I'll introduce her, continue to introduce her as she's on the line.
Hi, Joe.
Dr. George, is that you?
Yes, it is. Nice to see you. I'll hear from you again.
I cannot tell you how delighted I was when I heard from your people that you would like to return to this program. And let me tell you why. Because what I remember the most about our discussion last time was that it was absolutely insightful and delightful. And I was just absolutely pleased to punch, you know, that you were coming back. And I want to thank you so much for taking your time to be on our program again.
Well, it's very kind of you. It's a pleasure to be back.
Oh, that's great. I'll give a little bit of background for our listeners. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified otolaryngologist. And by the way, I also heard the term otorhinolaryngologist. Are they interchangeable?
Right. They are. It's ear, nose, and throat, just the longer version of it.
Okay. The reason why I asked that is because my wife is an audiologist, and, you know, I knew something about that. I sound smart, but I'm really not. Dr. Elena George graduated from Princeton University with a degree in biology. She received a master's degree in medical microbiology from Long Island University and received her medical degree from Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. Dr. George completed her residency at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital. Her training included general surgery at Lenox Hill Hospital, pediatric ENT at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, and head and neck oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And there is much more, but I'll leave it at that. Was that sufficient, Dr. George?
Yes, that better work.
Okay, great. Well, you certainly have the credentials, and I understand this evening that there are two subjects that you would like to discuss. Number one would be the Gulf oil toxicity, if you will, if I can abbreviate it that way, oil spill. Mm-hmm. And also you wanted to say a few words about the appointment of Donald Berwick as the head of the Medicare Medicaid system, which I have a few words to say about also, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But so that I do not monopolize this whole thing and run out of time, we do have only about 55 minutes left. Let me just open it up to you and tell us what's going on in the Gulf.
Well, I wanted to basically give people a little bit of a more in-depth view of what happened and what to expect. We've heard a lot of things on TV that have kind of glossed over
the
underlying problem here. I mean, this is a major catastrophe. Everybody knows that. But if you watch TV the last week or so, it's as if once they capped it, it's all over and everything's fabulous and no more oil. And, you know, we need to take a step back and be critical thinkers here. And that's really what I love about your show. And I think that your listeners are really very savvy and not just going to take pablum, but are actually going to tease things apart and think beyond what's given to them.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted people to have information, basically. So, you know, this core exit, which is the dispersant that was used, There's a question as to whether it was prohibited in the UK and in Europe. And that aside, nobody can actually tell anybody what the long-term side effects of this is going to be, because nobody knows exactly what's in it. I mean, it is it's a chemical that's used to break up oil.
Right.
It has certain properties, like polyethylene glycol in it, which, you know, it's not such a bad thing, but hundreds of thousands of gallons poured into the ocean
right.
can interact with oil and actually has some changes that occur. Basically,
right.
oxygen gets removed from the atmosphere in the water,
right.
and whatever it surrounds is going to become a dead zone.
Right.
And we have absolutely no idea how much fish and oysters and shrimp and fish that feed on crabs, etc., have taken this into their systems.
Right.
And they're part of the food chain. And we're the end point of this food chain. And I just have a question mark as to someone telling me, hey, it's great, no problem, don't worry about it.
Right.
And I know the people in Alaska had side effects from it.
I see. Well, you know, I always get concerned when everyone tells me, I start worrying when everyone tells me everything is okay. That's my cue. And I do. I mean, it's. I guess I've learned because I'm not 17 years old. I'm 67, but I still think I'm 17. But I've learned at least that. It seems that what I've heard, and you know, what we hear is so spotty and so contradictory, mm-hmm. depending on where you're getting your information from. Getting on the internet, of course, provides us with so much more information. However, it also confuses the issue because you're not certain of the credibility of some of these sources. Now, I think what they're saying is that there are microbes in the water that have basically multiplied and eaten a lot of the oil. Well, those microbes had to go somewhere, number one. And secondly, some of this oil has settled and will affect the clam, sea life that reside on the seafloor will affect that for the next at least 5, 10, or 15 years. Is that the case from where you see it?
Absolutely. There was a person from Alaska who spoke about the fish industry there, and that was a smaller spill, obviously, and she said it took about, what was it, over 8 or 9 years for them to get their fishing industry back to recover.
Yeah.
So this spill is magnitudes higher than that.
Right.
And you're absolutely right about the dispersion. It didn't, I mean, yes, there's bacteria, but I'm sorry, there's no way the bacteria can eat millions of gallons of oil in a week. I just
right.
don't believe that.
Right.
And ultimately, what we're not seeing is the problem. Core exit, which was dispersed at the site of the oil spill, dispersed the oil at the point where it was entering the water, right?
Right.
So what it did is it broke it up into very small globules and it settled to the bottom, but it's not gone. And so the fishermen came on TV the other day and they were, you know, talking about Plaquemines Parish, and he put his hand into the water and went underneath and he pulled up all this oil. The surface was clean, but underneath it really wasn't.
Okay.
So it's like one of these bait and switch type of things. There's nothing you can necessarily do at this point. The issues happen, but I just don't want people to be in the mindset of everything's great, let's just go back to business as usual. You really should watch what you're eating.
Right.
You should ask where you're getting the fish from. Those are things, those are simple questions. And the people working on it, that's my most concern is for the people who are working to clean it up.
Right.
I've seen people on the beaches without protection, no respiratory masks, no gloves, no boots on, children running around in the sand. Those are all potential exposures.
Right. Well, you see, Doctor,
we don't know the extent.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Doctor, you know, you're not with the program. You don't really seem to understand what we need to do. we have to make this look good. You see, what actually happens is another story, but we won't talk about that. I have had friends that were in Vietnam, for example, and what they tell me, and these guys were on the front lines, they were interrogators, they were, you know, scouts and all, I mean, horrible, horrible. When they talk about, not that I'm saying the Gulf War was Vietnam, but it's the analogies there, the metaphors there, if you will. When they talk about Vietnam, you're saying, which war was that? It's like talking about a war that we were not involved in. with. And it's it's something very, very much different. They talk about the war very differently than the people stateside talk about the war. And that always bothers me. And they very rarely speak about it. When they do, they hate doing it. But when they do, I always learn something, and I never prod or probe, because I know how distasteful it is to them. But think the things that they say almost make no sense at all. But I know they're right, because they were there. They were in the marshes and whatever, you know, and talking about the heat. And this is what concerns me about the news that we get here, is that we make nicey-nice out of the news. And I'd like to draw another comparison, if I just may take a minute, if you don't mind. My business, I have an industrial health testing business. One of the areas we specialize is in air contamination, and I became sort of an expert with respirators. In fact, anybody had a question on a respirator, they came to my company. What was really interesting at on 9/11, when you know, all these fumes and gases and whatever were being spilled out, you know, spewing all over the place. I looked, and now, of course, I never suspected that, you know, anything. I just thought it was a horrible. I was in shock like everyone else. But the first thing I noticed were that, you know, all these workers, you know, all in these gases and these fumes, and you know, they're wearing paper dust masks, you know, and the government says, well, the EPA said, well, we've issued something like 5,000 respirators, you know, at the site. Well, number one, the person who was distributing them happened to be a friend of mine. I knew him from the industry. But what they did is they violated absolutely every EPA, every OSHA rule in the book. And I knew for a fact I would have gone to, even though I wasn't there, I could have gone to court and testified that what those people were given were incorrect and worn incorrectly, and they were all at risk. And bingo, guess what happened? You know, how many people do we have ill today? But I'm just saying that what we hear and what we see, if we really don't know, we think things are, you know, the government is taking care of it. And they really don't. And it really bothers me. Now, I wasn't in Vietnam, but I watched 9/11 and I saw what happened. And I, at that time, I'm retired now. I still own the company. I'm retired. But I mean, I knew which respirators they needed. I'm sitting there saying, and you know what? I recall doing one thing. I was watching it. And when they came out, talked about the respirators they gave out, I literally yelled out. I mean, I said, no. I mean, I said, oh, excuse me. I mean, literally yelled out, no. Because I was so upset that they were doing all the wrong things. And now I like to revert that right back to what we are talking about, the oil spill. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we're getting the same story all over again.
It's the same. You've made an absolutely excellent point. The people who are in the midst of it, the people who are living it, you can't find them. I want to hear from somebody who's living there, somebody who's, right. who's family members, a fisherman. I want to know what their day-to-day life is like. You right. can't get them on TV. It's impossible. You have all sorts of pundits. You have people, and I love this one. My favorite now is the scientists who are employed by BP who are on TV now telling everybody how wonderful it is.
Right.
I mean, like they don't have a dog in this hunt. It doesn't
That's
even
right.
make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand from a human point of view, I want this to be over. I wish it never happened. And that feeling of if I just don't think about it, maybe it never happened mentality. We want it to be a good story, so we're willing to go along with it as a whole. And we just can't do that.
Right.
And it's not fair to the people living there. There's actually a woman, I found a woman on YouTube. Her name is Kendra Arneson, if people want to look her up. KindraArnesen. She's a woman whose husband is a fisherman who somehow got on the inside of all of these briefings and saw everything from an insider point of view.
Yeah.
And it's just disheartening to see how much is really going on, how much they're letting us know. And this is somebody who can speak to it. Just like as a physician, I know exactly what's coming down the pipe, but everybody out there thinks it's going to be something that it's really not going to be. And I can see it, and I'm trying to warn people. And it's kind of frustrating,
right.
but way important. We just have to get it out there so people can make up their minds.
Do you know any physicians in that area who are speaking as you are? Because you're not. You're in the Atlanta area, aren't you? I'm sorry, I've got where you.
I am.
In Atlanta area.
No, I'm in Atlanta.
In Atlanta. And do you any physicians in that Gulf region on the coast that are giving you any feedback or that you've spoken with regarding this?
Unfortunately, the person that I know who I trained with moved from the area after Katrina, so I actually don't know any close friends who are going through this. But I do know there's been reports of skin rashes, nausea, vomiting, confusion, dizziness, headaches. These are things that are all, you know, if you really read between the lines, these are symptoms of these fumes. I mean, we didn't discuss the other parts of this, but, you know, the oil spill is a hydrocarbon, right? There's various chemicals associated with a lot of different gases.
Right.
Benzene is one.
Right.
Hydrogen sulfide is another one.
Right.
I mean, these things have side effects when they get airborne. Methylene chloride, they can actually be absorbed into the water vapor. So when it rains, it can be brought up into the atmosphere and it falls elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's long-term effects. As long as this is, until the bacteria get rid of it all, or until something happens that we can figure out how to get it out of there, we're all going to be somehow affected by it.
Yeah.
Because the Gulf Stream will carry it towards the Atlantic, and the air, you know, as the fronts move through, you know, these things are real. People just need to pay attention. And if you're not feeling well, go to your doctor. I mean, if you're having headaches for no reason, you're feeling nauseous, dizzy, you have diarrhea, you have skin breakouts, things that are actually you hadn't had before, don't blow it off. I mean, this is about taking care of your health and being proactive. And I don't say these things to scare people. I say them so that people can be forewarned and make intelligent choices. If you choose to eat, that's fine. But if you choose not to, that's fine too. But at least you have to know what the choices are, right?
Right. And I'm afraid because of the economics of the situation, especially out in the Gulf, that people might be a little reluctant to seek medical help only because it's going to be costly, and that's something that's probably weighing on their minds now of where their next meal is going to come from. So they got a double-edged sword. They have their health issue and critical. I know benzene was always a major concern when the plants that I worked with, you know, employees were exposed to it. We had to make sure the respirators were proper and that everyone shaved properly and all this other good stuff to make certain that they had absolutely no leakage because it was deadly to them. And here we are. We're taking it so lightly. Let me ask you a question. There's one thing that was we seem to gloss over so much. It seems like we don't want to know. For example, a friend of mine called me this afternoon and mentioned that Peter Schiff was running for Senate and he only got 36% of the vote. Very disappointing. He's very disappointed that's all he got because he's sort of a libertarian type guy and very, you know, free market, you know, anti-government type guy. And he thought he would do much better. And I said, you know, the reason why he probably didn't win is because he had a message that wasn't positive. And he was telling people what they really didn't want to hear, and it violated all of their belief systems. And when I say belief systems, I don't mean religious belief system. I mean, you know, USA, we're number one, you know, all this other stuff. And I said, when you violate those, people don't want to know. They don't want to know the truth. They'd rather just run away. And I say that only because it applies in this case as well. We don't want to know. It's bad press to say, well, you know, there may be some, you know, methane leaking out and it could be dangerous. You know, we'd have wholesale panic because people can't handle it. They don't know how to digest the information. They don't know what to do. So what we do, it seems that we just back off and say, everything's okay and everybody's happy. Now, we had the situation with benzene and with methane. Now, methane is incredibly toxic and also very harmful to the environment. Whatever happened to this stuff? I mean, did it affect anyone on shore or did it just get dissipated? Do you have any idea?
Actually, it affected the workers. I mean, there were people, remember at the beginning of these reports, people were being taken away with quote-unquote heat exhaustion and all sorts of kind of vague, these were effects of sucking in these fumes for 8 hours on a beach.
Yeah.
You know, the woman that I told you about a minute ago, she had children, and every time they were home, they'd break out in rashes and respiratory problems. And when they'd leave and go somewhere else, they'd be okay.
Right.
I mean, these are real findings, real entities. And I bet you if you did a epidemiologic evaluation of the ER visit for asthma, respiratory distress, breakouts, I think the number would probably go up. But we're never going to know that because the media blackout, I think, you know, the press being free and being able to report this was slim and none. I mean, it became a military operation.
Right.
You couldn't even enter the beach without
being
arrested. You couldn't fly over it. Yeah. I mean, people need to think about that for a second. That's unusual, you know?
A friend of mine wanted to take his motorcycle. He says, I'm going to go down there. And he's used to be a fire marshal here in Tulsa. And he says, I want to go down there and just see for myself. I'm tired of hearing all these conflicting stories. He never went, you know, because he was heard that if he did go down there, they would have turned them around and said, go back home. And he said, well, that would have been a waste.
Absolutely.
You know. Let me stop for station identification. I'm late in doing that. Everyone's hollering at me here. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. With us today, we're pleased to have Dr. Elena George. she's board-certified otolaryngologist, and we're talking this evening about the Gulf oil spill, its toxicity, effect on the environment, and on the populace in that area. Please call in with your questions or comments, 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. I know you're out there. Don't let me come out there and find you. Call in and ask your questions. We'd love to have you on our program. All right, Dr. George, where do you think, now I also hear that although they plugged it up, it's not really plugged up because it's coming out all over the place in other areas. And I, you know, I'll be honest with you, I don't know what to believe anymore. I put my hands up when I heard that. In fact, just this afternoon, a friend of mine told me, I said, I give up. I don't know what to, you know. Yep, shoot me.
I'm going to take it from a scientific point of view. Just think about it from that point. This is a pressure head that's coming up from the crust of the Earth, right? I mean,
correct.
This is a huge pressure head.
Right.
They managed to put this cap on, and all of a sudden the pressure went down.
Right.
Yet it's the only exit point.
Right.
How did that work? I mean, how do you get the pressure to come down before you even capped it? It had to go somewhere else.
Absolutely.
I'm just not sure where quite.
Right.
But, I mean, if you want to think about it in terms of logic, logistics, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right,
that's
I agree.
A huge pressure head.
Right.
Huge.
And apparently they drilled over one of the Earth's highest methane deposits. I mean, high-pressure methane deposits. And they had to take special precautions when they drill in that area because of that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and bingo, the whole thing blew anyway. Now, oil always seeps out anyway constantly. And it does seep out, and it comes out in because it's so cold down there, it comes out in these globs, if you will. What was the logic of breaking those globs up? Wouldn't it have been a lot easier if you had a pancake, so to speak, of oil to pick that up and eventually disperse it? Because the fish are not going to go there and bite it. But once you disperse it, then you dissolve it basically in the water, and it goes in the fish's fins and all that. I know nothing about fish. I know nothing about biology or whatever. I know nothing about hydrocarbons. But that certainly didn't make any sense to me. Can you enlighten me at all on that?
Well, think about it in economic terms. You know, BP was going to be fine for a certain amount of money per barrel of oil spilled. If you can't really capture the amount of oil spilled because it's all dispersed and it's in droplets, then by definition, you're not going to be able to capture as much, you know, all the fines that need to be levied against these guys.
Right.
So you get it out of sight, then you actually end up lowering your liability.
Right.
I think it's straight money, I would say. And ultimately, if it's out of sight, then you can, and they're already doing it, they're pulling back their booms. They're saying, oh, it's all over, now we can just stop. You know,
right.
Or we can pull back on our intensity.
Right.
And the people living there, I feel so bad for the people in the Gulf. When the cameras turn off, I think they're going to be on their own. And that's the sad part. It's like Katrina. They're still building from that. This is going to be the same thing.
Yeah. You know, when you think about it,
impulse injury.
You know, it's one thing when it's headline news. Once it's no longer headline news, it dissipates. It goes away. And then the effects of it. See, I would assume the true effects of this will occur down the road, whether it be a year, 5 years, or 10 years down the road. But 10 years from now, people say, "Oh, I'm sick because of that." Remember that oil spill in the Gulf?
And I was going to say, get out of here. You know, what are you, nuts? And but that's, well, you know better than I would, being in oncology. You know, people don't touch something and they get cancer on Wednesday. They get exposed to something, and sometimes it's 30, 40 years, and that's the result of it. How are they? Is anyone addressing this at all in the medical community, saying, hey, you know, things are not really okay? Is there anything happening at all?
Not that I can determine. And if you want to use an example of first responders, look at the people who helped in 9/11. They're still trying to get compensated for
the
devastation that was wrought upon them. Yeah. So if they're not going to take care of those guys, I have questions. They don't have anything really in place that there's some sort of procedure that these guys are going to go through. I have question marks on it. They've yet to pay what they owe for the people who went out there and used their own boats to help dredge. In the Gulf, they're still waiting for their money.
Right.
So they want to limit this. They want to cap this. If you enter this big, I think they have a guy, a czar, who's running this, the money that BC had to put in to be dispersed to people who are victims of it. Well, you have to sign something, basically, and say, I'm going to accept this money and I can't sue BC after the fact.
Yeah, that's right. Absolve them of all responsibility. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this drives me nuts, I'll be very honest with you. And not that I have far to go, by the way. I mean, I'm very close to that anyway. In fact, a friend of mine says, what are you, bipolar? I said, no, I'm quadrupolar. Are you kidding me? I'm worse than that. But, you know, it seems like those people in September of 2001 that assisted people, risked their lives, were coined heroes. 10 years later, you know, or 5 years later, whatever the case may be, when they contract all of these horrible diseases, you know, as a result of that, and they make noise about that, or they need some assistance in getting well, we call them crybabies. You know, they go from heroes to crybabies only because we had some time in between. We forget about it, and, you know, that was a long time ago. Same thing happened in Korea. Same thing happened in Vietnam. I mean, you name it. This is, and, you know, it's a repeated story, and it works every single time. And I don't know. Do you have any feel for what the extent of what we're going to see down the road on this thing? I mean, what the medical effects of this will be? You have any feel or even projection of what that might be?
Well, knowing what the side effects are of the various gases, you can pretty much project out. Benzene is a carcinogen. It can cause cancer.
Yeah.
So we know that the ocean's already looked at the parts per billion level, and it was elevated above what was safe for a workplace.
Right.
Hydrogen sulfide. I'm sorry, benzene can cause leukemia or lymphoma down the road. Hydrogen sulfide can cause problems with your respiratory tract.
Right.
So things like chronic bronchitis, I wouldn't say emphysema, but basically a chronic pulmonary disease, throat irritation, sinus infections. It can even affect fertility, some of these things like methylene chloride. So it's a ton of things. Actually, I wrote a blog on this several weeks ago, and if you go to drelenagheorge.com, you'll see the different toxins in the list and also the link, so you can go back and read the actual insert from the chemical companies on these various solvents.
Yeah.
So you can actually go to the source and read about it.
Yeah. Now, I believe benzene, I'm going back in years, may have been what they call IDLH, immediately dangerous to life and health. I think benzene was one of those, and that means if you were exposed to any significant amount, even for a short period of time, you know, could be very significant. You know, it could harm you for life or even kill you. And I think benzene was one of those, and they treated it relatively lightly. What about the methane? Did that just dissipate and go bye-bye or something? Whatever happened to that? Do you have any idea?
No, it's still there. Remember, this is a well that's potentially may still be open at some points along the ocean floor. And methane is part and parcel to this well.
Correct.
It's loaded with methane. That's what started the initial explosion on the rig. So that's still, you know, it's bubbling. That's still out there. I mean, it's not showing us, but it's there.
Well, methane is, what, colorless, odorless, and tasteless, or something like that. And so it can come out, and it, you know, and they say, everything's fine. And no one would know the difference. I mean, someone literally can die there from methane, and they go, you know, not our problem. And the person would have to prove it was methane that killed the person. Or if they had long-term exposure, they would have to prove it. But the longer we wait, of course, then, of course, the more insensitive we come to their particular dilemma. That's what bothers me.
That's true. It's people have already gone on to the next thing or the next crisis.
That's right.
You know, so it's like, oh, it's solved. It's done. You get kind of a short-term attention span that we have, unfortunately.
That's right.
But, you know, this affects us as a country. This is a third of our seafood source. It's a, you know, the seafood breadbasket, if you want to put it that way.
Yep.
There's another oil spill in Michigan. There's another small oil spill more inland where the blue crabs in Louisiana have been affected. There's a lot of oil issues going on, and it seemed like it was a domino. They happened like one after the other, and it barely got news coverage, the one in Michigan, and that was pretty substantial.
You know what?
So,
I'm sorry. I stepped all over your words, and I apologize.
That's quite all right. We're both passionate about this subject.
When I was young, you know, in the Middle Ages, when I was young, seafood was the poor man's food. I remember my family, and we never went out to eat. I came from an old Italian family where my father worked, you know, the whole ball of wax, and we just like the old-fashioned Italian in New York City, you know, living in an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out to eat about twice a year. Once where we go out to eat for my father's birthday and one other occasion. And I don't remember what that occasion was. And that was a lot. Twice a year was like we were, you know, really going at it. But when we went out, we used to go for, you know, seafood a lot of time. I don't know why. But I and maybe because at those days it was relatively inexpensive. And we didn't have all of these concerns about all the toxicity. And today, when you have seafood, you know, you got to worry about if it's a farm raised because of all the PCBs.
Uh-huh.
And if it's not farm raised and it's in, you know, the shallow waters, then you have all the pollutants from industry. So you have to go to, you know, deep water salmon, you know, out in Alaska. It's amazing. Am I looking at this thing incorrectly, or do we have a crisis?
You are right on point. It's like going through a maze, trying to find food that's good for you, that's nutritionally sound, and that's pretty much edible at this point. You haven't mentioned genetically modified crops.
Oh, yeah, that's another one.
Those things popped up everywhere. They're in our food supply. They're in corn. They're in soy.
Right.
I mean, we're now probably drinking soft drinks with high fructose corn syrup from genetically modified crops.
Right.
And, you know, these things don't have, I mean, they were touted as being great, but they're not. You know, they don't, some of them are, and some of the rice ones, they can't even make a seed, so you can't use the seed to produce other generations of it. You only have one crop, and then you have to buy more seeds.
Right.
The other ones don't yield as much. It's just, it's a disaster. I mean, our food supply, you need to look very closely at it.
Yeah,
and I think the closer you can stay to you growing your own food, or at least going to a farmer's market and keeping it within 50 miles or so from where you live, you have the best chance of at least getting something that's nutritionally balanced.
Right.
It's very difficult. And the sad thing is, if you look back in the Middle Ages, the people who had the most money were the heavy people, were carrying extra weight. Now it's the people with the least amount of money who carry the most weight, because the quality of food is horrible. It's sugar.
That's correct.
It's fat. And it's cheap. It shouldn't cost you more money to get a pomegranate than it should to get a bag of chips.
Right.
Something's wrong with that.
Yeah.
And all this talk about the obesity epidemic, it's very, very, it's lip service, because they're not fixing the food supply.
That's correct.
You can have your children exercise and all these sorts of things, but everything they put in their mouth is potentially toxic.
That's right.
No one's talking about that. That's where the onus should be on the food industry to stop. No more estrogens, no more growth hormones. When you have seven-year-olds going through puberty, did you see that story the other day? A seven-year-old going through puberty?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that is.
This isn't in a vacuum, basically. We need to really take control of our health, because I can tell you, when we get to our next segment with Mr. Berwick, it's going to be a kind of a slog to try to stay healthy.
All right. I want to rant on that for a second, but I'd like to stop once again for station identification. Callers, you're on my bad list because I haven't heard from you yet. 646-652-4620. Please call in with your comments, questions, or whatever. And please, make it like open mic night. I don't want Dr. George to think that no one's listening. This is Joe Cristiano. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. With us tonight, we have Dr. Elena George. She's board-certified otolaryngologist. And we're talking about... Basically, we started with the oil spill and the effect on the environment and the food chain, and now we're going to expand that a little bit because we're going to get on another subject. We're also going to speak about Dr. Donald Berwick, who's the head of the Medicare, Medicaid, section of the government, which that's going to be a very interesting subject. But I did want to, maybe before we went on to him, I did want to mention that, you know, this... You know, I think I'm going crazy, Doctor, because, you know, I'm always thinking this stuff, and I like to get to the core issue, to the core problem. You know, don't give me the surface stuff. That, you know, don't give me the we're number one. I want to know the core thing. If I can't get the core, I don't want to discuss it. But what we have here is that, you know, the more toxic our food gets, you know, the wealthier, basically, you have to be to buy foods that are not toxic. Right? I mean, you got to buy organic foods. That's more expensive, and then when you look at the degradation of wealth in America in the past, I'm talking from 1950 on. Let's take this from a real macro point of view. Well, people have less wealth today, or less disposable income today, real disposable income, than they had back in 1950, so they can least afford it. So it seems like there's a double-edged sword. The food supply is getting more toxic, while the ability or the funds available to buy foods that are healthy for you are just getting exponentially more expensive, thus you're shutting out a larger portion of the population. It just seems like this is not a good place that we're not going in the right direction at all.
Not at all. Especially if you tag on to this, the fact that we're moving towards a universal healthcare model where one size fits all.
Right.
But if the majority of the population is sick, there's no way that you could afford to take care of this many ill people.
Right.
And you're creating them. That's the sad part.
That's right.
The study recently said that high fructose corn syrup in little children caused them to produce more fat cells in the abdominal area.
Right.
Which, as you get older, is definitely a risk factor for heart disease, stroke, obesity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're making little lab tests, you know, to... people that are going to come back and basically be very sick adults and cost the whole system more. And you know what? I'm not really into cost. I'm into quality of life. So I want to be 90 and I want to be enjoying my life. I do not want to be in a wheelchair or on drip somewhere.
Exactly.
And we're leading people down the path of being sick as they get older, not healthy. That's inappropriate.
Yeah. You know, a woman's... let me stop and do it. Folks, I don't know if I mentioned our telephone number. Call in 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Just a couple of days ago, my wife and I were visiting a friend of ours who had quadruple bypass, you know. I hope he changes his diet, which I doubt he will do. But... when we're in the hospital going towards the elevator, a woman stopped us. Never saw her before in our lives, you know. And she says, excuse me. She said, you look like in such incredibly good shape. She said, what do you do? I said, ma'am, I said, you want me to be honest with you? I said, we exercise a little bit, but that's not where it's at. I said, it's what you eat. And I said, we don't eat right. We Americans just don't eat right. If I told you what we ate, you wouldn't do it, you know. I said, my wife said, she says, well, we're vegans now. You know, we really learned to eat that way. And we know that that's a much better way to eat. We're more picky on what we do. And I cheat once in a while. You know, I still go for a cup of coffee. I have my vanilla bean scone for 140 calories. But, you know, but by and large, I don't have the Baconator, you know, with the Biggie fries and the Largy Coke, you know. And I avoid stuff like that. And my wife just read the other day, which I thought was interesting, that did research and they said that belly fat actually is a contribution to Alzheimer's. don't know the connection, but isn't that amazing? And this is brand new. And so you don't know what effects would be if you really don't take care of yourself. And we're being forced into a fast food culture. That's the sorrowful part. Right. You know, McDonald's is great. You know, you just come in, you know, you tell them, I want a number four, you know, a Biggie Coke or whatever the case may be, and you're off. And the thing is, it tastes so good. It really, we have a caller
on. This is the crux. You just hit the nail on the head. We have the choice. I don't care what it is. We as individuals, if we collectively decide we're not going to do this anymore, we're not going to eat junk.
Right.
We want, if you're going to have a soft drink, why don't I make it with cane sugar instead of this nonsense with this high fructose corn syrup? Mm-hmm. You can say, I'm not going to go to a doctor who can't understand me or puts me in for 5 minutes and then next.
Right.
I'm not going to go through a body scanner because I think it's unsafe and I'm not going to fly.
Right.
You can do all sorts of things on an individual basis because money talks. And when people stop spending money that basically hurts them and decide to, I'm going to handle my business.
That's right.
I'm going to take care of myself. It may not be the easy way. It may cost me a little bit more up front. But you know what? It's a heck of a lot cheaper than ending up in an ICU. I'll tell you that.
You know, I'm 67. I still do the same things that I've done. The only thing I can't do, I used to be a long-distance runner and racer, and I can't because my knees are destroyed, so I can't do that anymore. Other than that, I do everything I used to do when I was young. And in fact, my sons, who are in their 40s, they tell me, they said, Dad, would you please grow up? Hold on, we have someone on the line. Hold on, let's see what this person has to say. Let's see.
Well, that's the key to health. The key to health is to stay active.
Yes,
it
is.
And to stay engaged and to have a sense of purpose, not sit around.
Absolutely. The sense of purpose is critical. Caller, you're on the air. Your question, your name and where you're calling from, and what your question or comment is, please.
Hi. You should recognize my voice. This is your wife, Erin.
Hello, Erin. My wife is calling. It's nice. Thank you for calling. Are you talking to me?
Okay. I have a question for the doctor. As a vegan, since Joe and I have become vegan several months ago, maybe over a year ago almost, I have been concerned about how much protein we need. All of my research has shown that we really don't need near as much as most Americans take in, and I wanted a professional opinion on that. And also, since we don't eat a lot of grains, I would like to know what you would suggest as a good way to really take in a lot of fiber, which we eat lots of vegetables. I still seem to have a problem with not enough fiber. And lastly, what kind of vitamins do you think, if anything, we should be taking? What kind of supplements? And I'll take my answer off the air. Just listen. Please go ahead.
Okay. Well, this is not my total specialty in terms of nutrition, but as a physician, I can tell you one thing in terms of the vitamins. If you can get them naturally, that's the best way to get them instead of synthetic. And I'm a big proponent now of juicing because I think that's probably one of the easiest ways to get some fiber and to actually load up on your daily requirements without all the calories. So things like kale, spinach, you definitely need iron. You need vitamin D, so you need to get out there and get in the sun. So if you're not a sun worshiper, you might have to take some supplemental vitamin D, at least 2,000 units a day, because that's anti-cancer, antiviral. I agree with you. You don't need 40, 50 milligrams of protein, of protein a day, but you need clean protein. So tofu would be okay. Make sure it's not genetically modified soy that you're getting it from, but for beans would be a great thing. You can eat, I'm sorry, I don't know the vegan diet really well, but you can eat beans, can you not?
Yes.
Okay. So beans are a great source of fiber and protein, and they're pretty lean. Lots of water, and that's another problem that people seem to have is getting clean water and water without all the impurities and drugs in them, basically, at this point. in terms of that answers the question of the vitamins, right? I hope.
Right.
And mm-hmm. the protein question. And then you had a third question. I'm sorry.
Fiber.
Vitamins, protein, and fiber.
Fiber, right.
Oh, fiber.
Fiber.
Well, beans. Beans and also juicing. Beans. You'll get them both that way.
Okay. May I ask you one other question?
Sure.
Since I'm over 60, and it seems like I have begun developing cramps in my feet, and primarily my feet at night when it's bedtime. Is that because I am not taking in enough potassium or something?
Usually it's magnesium that you're not getting enough that gives you cramps, right. So you should make sure, I mean, if you haven't had a complete blood work, you definitely want to get one to make sure you're not anemic and make sure that your metabolic electrolytes are normal, just to make sure that you're on the right track. Because you guys just switched over, so the body, you're going through some changes. We just want to make sure you don't go too far off balance. But generally magnesium is the thing that gives you that. So you can supplement with magnesium as well. You can also try, if you're having issues with Charlie horses and that sort of thing, things like valerian tea, that helps with that as well.
Valerian?
Yeah.
Okay.
It comes in a capsule too. But that's really a really nice non-narcotic, helps you sleep and helps stop pain.
Wow, terrific. Well, thank you for all that personal, wonderful advice. I hope it helps other people as well.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'd like to, I want to get on the subject of Dr. Donald Burke, if we can. Reason Magazine wrote this. They said they call him a bureaucratic head of Medicare and Medicaid, and he said Harvard's latest train wreck of an appointment. And this is what Dr. Berwick said, and this is incredible. And I'm going to read this word for word. If you'll just be patient with me for a second, he says, "Please do not put your faith in market forces." He said. It's a popular idea that Adam Smith's invisible hand would do a better job of designing care than leaders with plans can. I find little evidence that market forces relying on consumers choosing among an array of products with competitors fighting it out leads to the healthcare system you want and need. In the U.S., competition is a major reason for our duplicative a supply-driven, fragmented care system. Now, the only thing I want to do is scream, but allow me, please, I guess you want to talk about them, please do so.
you picked the first part of the quote that I actually have in the recent blog I wrote about him. He goes on to say, "I favor expanding choices, but I cannot believe that the individual healthcare consumer can enforce through choice the proper configuration of a system as massive and complex as healthcare. That is for leaders to do."
Right.
So basically, he has contempt for the patient and the doctor because we're both too stupid to know
what
is best for the individual patient. That's going to go by the wayside.
Correct.
If anybody had any question about whether we were going to enter a socialized, rationed healthcare system, this appointment should answer that question. Anybody
right.
who doesn't want to see that is really in denial. This gentleman loves the British system. He thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread, and he thinks that we should enter it and start it. So we're going to be tearing down the system, and I still believe it's one of the best in the whole world. It has a lot of problems, but the problems have been foisted on it by the government.
Correct.
And by third-party payers.
Right.
And if we could get rid of the government and third-party payers and have a patient and doctor have a relationship like they used to, where you could take time and talk to your patient, we would not be spending so much money.
Right.
So his method, and if you think about this, I've thought about this obviously quite a bit. They're promising to cover 30 million people with more medical treatments for less money. When is that ever going to happen? It's never going to happen. System's bankrupt. There's not enough doctors to actually take care of the patients in the system that we currently have. the system is based on treating disease as opposed to treating wellness, which would be a lot cheaper, by the way.
Right.
And it's broken. You have corporations like hospital corporations, pharmaceutical industry, literally, and the AMA, which is their bed buddy, controlling healthcare, and they all have a stake.
Right.
They have a stake in you needing a medication every day of your life forever.
Right.
And the AMA has a stake in making codes that doctors have to keep running through hoops to learn while they get paid by the pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
The AMA only represents 1 out of 5 doctors. Let's be very clear on that. And that number's probably dropping further.
Right.
That's a lobby organization. They could care less about patient care. I haven't belonged to it since I was a medical student. Now, my problem now is doctors going along and getting along. You know, I'm a little bit of a maverick if you haven't figured that one out by now. But we can sit here like sheep and just say, well, I'll just see another 20 patients a day and I'll make it work.
Right.
It's already broken. We've done that.
Yeah.
So if, I don't know if patients can see this, but I see this as a practicing physician right now. There's a paradigm shift. Doctors are leaving private practice. Doctors
right.
are becoming employed by the hospital.
Right.
Doctors are joining large groups. And I'm a dinosaur. I'm a solo practitioner who takes care of my own patients.
Right.
I don't have an MA or a PA or a nurse practitioner. That's going to be gone. I won't be able to stay open very much longer because I can't afford to take the 20% hit from Medicare.
Right.
And as I said before, the government and third-party payers are messing up the system
right.
because they control the payments to the people who are doing the work, but not to the people who aren't.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a personal example. I have a friend who just had a baby, twin. She got her bill, and the hospital bill was $100,000 per baby. Her bill was $86,000. That was for the have the children and room and board. And the anesthesiologist got paid, what is it, $280. Okay, so the doctor who was doing the anesthesia got paid less than a fraction of what the hospital got paid.
Right.
Don't tell me that it costs $20,000 for a room and board in a hospital
right.
for 5 days.
Right.
You know, this cost of healthcare has been foisted on, like, doctors are the ones doing it. It's not the doctor. That's a perfect example
right.
of where the cost is coming from.
Yep.
Nobody's doing a thing about that because they've been grandfathered in. And like the banks, if you look at how the government entered this, the banks are now Pac-Man, the little community banks, and now they're huge. Well, the same thing's happening with hospitals. The community hospitals are being bought by the big ones.
Right.
And it's dog eat dog. They're making money no matter what happens, but the physician and the person providing the care is just along for the ride. And that's not boding well for the patient down the road, I can tell you.
Well, there's no more doctor-patient relationship. It's doctor and, yeah. and provider relationship. And the patient is just out here hanging, and it makes no sense. And I can tell you too many stories, but it'll take too much time. This really concerns me. That it concerns me to the point where the only way we're going to reverse this is if we have a true revolution in this country. I mean, people get truly angry, and I don't mean just Tea Party. I mean beyond that. And I know not what I speak when I say that, but when people get so angry that people in office get frightened, they say, you know, this is not going to work. I asked my friends who are progressives, I said, who do you think wrote this 2,400-page healthcare bill? the congressman. I said, you think this political hack, you know, who can't put two words together, sat down and wrote a 2,400-pound technical thing? Think for a second. They said, oh, they have a staff for it. You mean the people that they hire out of college to be their slaves, they wrote it? I said, no, they couldn't have done that in a million years. Now think further. Well, they think further. And they say, well, the pharmaceutical companies wrote it. Now we're getting somewhere. And when do you think they wrote this thing? Last Wednesday? You know, they wrote this thing years and years ago, and they keep on pounding. They keep on giving more and more money to Congress. Say, come on, guys, here, you know. And what they do, all they give Congress is bullet points, like it's going to do this, 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 and that. And then Congress gets up and says, well, it's going to do this, 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 and that. And I know the bill, and, you know, did you read it? No. And Nancy Pelosi, what a clown she is. She said that we need to pass it, because once we'll pass it, we'll find out what's in it.
And we'll know what's in it. She wasn't lying. She's absolutely right.
Yeah, and she's right. That's exactly what will happen.
After it was passed, Did you see the stock market? The stock for hospitals and pharmaceutical companies and insurance, medical insurance industry went up.
Yeah.
They benefited from this. I mean,
absolutely.
It's a win-win. You're now mandated to have to carry insurance.
Yeah.
But they neglected to fix the insurance itself, so you can still carry your $300, $400, $5,000 deductible per month, and you can still be denied care that you need because they get to decide whether or not you get your CT or whether you get your surgery or whether you get your medication.
Yeah,
that didn't change.
I tell all my friends it's just a bait and switch. Yeah, I tell you what, just wait. I said, you know, we're older, unfortunately. I don't consider myself old. I still consider myself 15, and that's what drives me nuts. When I say, you know, Medicare, I go, please, I don't even say that word. But, you know, if someday I need surgery, you know, after this stuff kicks mm-hmm. in, and I'm 75 years old, and they're going to say, well, Mr. Cristiano, you're 75, you need the surgery. Would you want to deny this young person that surgery? It's either going to be you, this young person. And, you know, really, you lived a long life, you know, sorry, and goodbye, you know? And people don't realize
Absolutely.
It's got to be rationed because there's doctors, everyone's dropping out. Oh, my
friends
are
giving them too much credit, Joe. You're giving them way too much credit. They're not even going to ask you, Mr. Cristiano, do you think you should give up your right? They're just going to do it. They're not going to get asked that question. They're going to give you a chance of a hospice, okay?
I'm so disappointed.
Mentality. The good of the many outweigh the needs of the few. And this last quote, I think, really sums him up. Yeah. If a new drug or procedure is effective and has some advantage over an existing alternative, then does the incremental benefit justify the likely additional cost?
Yeah.
There it is in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Even if it's good and even if it's going to save your life, if it's too much money, they're not going to approve it.
Exactly.
And I can tell you that once Medicare makes a decision on payments and what's covered, the private insurance companies piggyback on what Medicare does because they're all based off of Medicare.
Yeah.
So by definition, everybody's quality will drop. They already have a 40% surcharge on the better insurance plans that allow you to go to a doctor that you want without gatekeepers. Well, those plans will drop because who's going to spend 40%, you know, surcharge? So they're going to go down to the HMO, which is a gatekeeper, keep you in the medical, you know, primary care system as long as possible, and manage you until you've got a real problem, then you get referred. But it's sometimes too late when that happens.
Yeah.
But
my doctor, my doctor has been wonderful to me. I mean, we disagree on a lot of things, but he's wonderful, and he's had it. The thing is, he's about 57 years old or something like that, and he's dragging. He's like 20 years older than I am, you know. By the way, doctor, you know, this our hour is up almost. We have about two more minutes. I'd like to give you just, if you can, just 1 minute, so you'll give me 1 minute to close down the program, shut down the program. So can I just give you 1 minute to wrap everything up, and then we'll take it at that, okay?
Yeah. We've talked about a lot of things, but I write a blog about once a week, and I've been writing for the past year. So you can see everything on my website, drelainageorge.com. That's ElainaGeorge.com. And everything that we've talked about is in a lot more detail on the site. And so I think the links that you can go to, you can go and do your own detective work and start thinking outside the box. That's what I'd like people to be able to do.
Okay. Doctor, thank you so much for being on our program. I'd love to have you back sometime in the near future, and I hope you would accept our invitation.
Absolutely, Joe, anytime.
Okay. Thank you so much, and good night.
Good night.
Wow. I mean, she is really neat. I'd love to have her back on a regular basis. In fact, so will you guys remind me out there in Radio Land to have her back when something comes up medical, we'll have her back to comment on it. This is the end of today's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride in your every move. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal." The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.